Good evening, everyone. You're listening to Skip Intro. I'm Ayman Rashad, and in the studio with me are Ian McNally and Julian Yap. And today we are going to talk about a couple of Christmas movies, because why not? It's November. Christmas is already here, I guess, and all the decorations are up. And we're talking about Christmas movies because there is a movie that is coming up called Last Christmas, starring Emilia Clarke, Henry Golding, Emma Thompson, and Michelle Yeoh.
Again.
What do you mean again?
Did you follow me here?
Are elves always so cynical?
Yes, relentlessly. These are dark times.
I'm Tom.
Kate. Last
Christmas. Here we are.
Is this the bit where you murder me?
So what is it that you do?
I sing.
Oh, that's amazing.
Anyway, boring.
I'm not bored.
I love the George Michael song Last Christmas. Uh-huh. And I love George Michael as a singer as well. Does it live up to his legacy, I guess, is what I'm asking.
That's a big weight for a frothy romantic comedy with Emilia Clarke in it to shoulder.
Yeah, but also they didn't sell this as a George Michael film, right?
Yeah, it's mm-hmm. relatively, for a film that, like, it's about as subtle as a brick through a window, the music choices are quite subtle.
Yeah.
Like, plot-wise and everything else, forget about that. But actually, they don't batter you over the head with the music throughout. It's there, and as a, you know, George Michael fan, or even if you have a passing knowledge of the catalogue, you'll catch hints. And some of them are, like, just arrangements in the background, which is quite nice.
But also, I kind of want a lot more George Michael. I was expecting the inevitable Christmas karaoke scene. Hmm. There was none of that. Emilia Clarke, just every time she's about to sing, she sings a George Michael song.
Yeah. It's like she loves George Michael, but she doesn't love George Michael. As in, she doesn't seem to go...
But she only listens to George Michael.
Yeah, she only listens to it.
That's the only thing she has on her phone.
It's surprising how little time she spends, like, actually loving George Michael in this movie. Yeah.
So if this movie is not really about George Michael, then...
It's
about Last Christmas.
It's actually about Christmas 2017.
Yes.
Because this movie takes place at... Well, the start's in 2017. It does have an odd timelessness about it. Yeah. Mainly because Emilia Clarke's character, Kate, works in a Christmas shop in Covent Garden called Yuletide, which is run by Michelle Yeoh, who calls herself Santa, although there's a joke about that, and I think we'll get to problems about that later. And she keeps running into this guy, played by Henry Golding, and... She's a bit of a mess. Like, she's a movie mess, as in her hair is quite nicely done. Her makeup is artfully messy. Mm-hmm. And she's not homeless. She just doesn't have anyone's couch to sleep on right now.
Yeah.
And the movie is just about her meeting this guy, kind of picking her life up and wandering through the feelings of loving George Michael and loving Christmas. And also Emma Thompson's Yugoslavian.
Why? Just because? Is it just because? Or are there, like, questions about immigration and stuff like that?
Kind of. It actually goes into, I mean, it's a very weird thing, because for this kind of movie, you could probably do it in a kind of a timeless style. Like, Love Actually, apart from the fact that Richard Curtis couldn't have predicted Brexit. But Paul Feig includes references to Brexit in this movie. So in future years, it's going to be a bit weird to have those comments in there. I mean, the Yugoslavia, Emilia Clarke is Yugoslavian in this. And it's like former Yugoslavia. They're not like Croatian or the different republics that came after that. They're actually Yugoslavian. Mm-hmm. And it actually has really no bearing on the plot. It could be any kind of generational differences between people.
Yeah, and I think that was clearly a choice that they wanted to introduce, like, oh, let's do a rom-com, let's do a Christmas movie, but we'll do it from the perspective of first-generation immigrants, which I don't think we've ever had, not in a big blockbuster Christmas movie before. Terminal, maybe.
Yeah.
But it brought an interesting enough thread of, is the country you're from or the country that you're in, the place that you're living in, is that where you call home, especially when it's Christmas, when it's a time for home and family and belonging, and how immigration, especially in the UK at the moment, how that can affect someone who might not feel completely safe in a country where they have found solace or a home in a difficult time in the past.
But we're bigging this up a little too much. It is actually a deeper well than this movie has any interest in plumbing. It's literally just a thread, and it's also like, oh, she's first generation, living in England. That's why Emilia Clarke doesn't have to do a Yugoslavian accent.
Yeah.
Because Emma Thompson's basically doing Borat in this, and it's a bit, it's a weird choice. It doesn't work at all, basically.
It doesn't work. There's one good joke of her being, you know, that Eastern European mom.
So it's even weirder that, like, you can imagine the director forcing this on Emma Thompson, but she co-wrote it with her husband as well as other writers. So it's like, it's an odd thing. But the main thrust of this plot is Emilia Clarke is quirky. I mean, this is it's almost like she's the same character from Me Before You.
Literally the exact same thing, where she's the most mundane character ever, but she has a few problems and she acts just with her eyebrows.
And she wears sparkly tights and short skirts.
Yeah.
That seems to be, I think she's taken the lesson from Terminator Genesis that if she wears long trousers, the movie does badly. Because she seems to be, she's just wearing an elf outfit. She works in that elf shop. I think it's about time we circled the background to Michelle Yeoh on this. We're staying away from talking about the main romantic subplot because there is a twist to this movie, and it's something that people are either loving or hating, or also just hating this movie in general.
Yeah. I was so excited for this movie because I guessed the twist and I was hoping it wouldn't be it because it would truly be terrible, but also really hoping it was going to be it so that it would be truly terrible. What,
was it the twist that you guessed in the end? Did you guess correctly?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. But then you weren't as happy as you thought you would be, right?
I wasn't. I was excited. You know, Henry Golding, Michelle Yeoh coming back, and this is supposed to be the big Christmas film this year. And in a lot of ways, it kind of is. It has the makings of something that could be up there with Love Actually or Bridget Jones, but it really falls really short. And for me, that's because I think the film, despite the plot's terrible and I love it. Mm-hmm. And the acting is terrible and I love it. The problem for me is that it's underlyingly very racist. And
Why do you see that?
You can always tell when a script has been written for Asian characters, but not by Asian characters, by Asian people. And it's underlyingly racist in the way that Michelle Yeoh's character speaks to other people, or the way that her character is an interesting, you don't know anything about her, Chinese woman who's running a shop in Covent Garden and she has mysterious connections so she can get weird things for Christmas. Mm-hmm. And she has, you know, weird and fascinating interests in Christmas and a love for Christmas, and her name is Santa.
Yeah.
And it's problematic in the way that it was enough that it kept me out of the film a lot of the time. I was really uncomfortable for most of this.
She could have been just a quirky lady and it wouldn't have been fine.
Yeah.
It didn't have to. There's an element of subsuming her identity for Western taste, literally.
Yeah.
Or your London tastes. I think what I wanted to see is that there's a friend of mine who loves romantic comedies with older people in it, and there's an element of that with Michelle Yeoh and a character who comes into the shop, and like, that's a movie I would gladly watch.
Yeah.
Because her doing some comedy stuff in that is great.
Yeah.
It's just the character beats aren't great. It is. There's also, like, dealing with the homeless. It's hard, you know, it's a tricky area. There's a homeless beat that runs through this as well about, like, how she's dealing with the homeless. Or it's something that, you know, that Henry Golding's character likes to help out people, and whether she should get it. If, it's kind of help Emilia Clarke stop being so selfish, essentially. But they're all incredibly happy homeless people. It doesn't really deal with the issues of homeless people.
Yep.
It is incredibly light and fluffy on that area. I did think Emilia Clarke is fine in this. She really needs to find a part
that isn't this.
That isn't Daenerys from
Game of Thrones.
Henry Golding's got a weird part. I mean, there's also, you could say, in the race and in his element, because it never really addresses anything about where he's from or anything.
No.
You just know.
They never mention Malaysia in the movie.
Think they would. Oh, they, I'm from Penang.
There's reasons for it, but it is odd that there's nothing about his background or where he's from or anything in this.
Yeah, none of that was a problem for me. The problem for me was that they were trying to cover themselves up with funny jokes by saying that, oh, look, we're good people because we can make jokes about it and we are also pretty woke, but actually you're exposing your...
But actually, Brexit.
Yeah, but Brexit is happening.
I got swept up in it. I don't think it's up there with the classics of Christmas holiday movies, but it was a fine enough time, and that's because I'm a, you know, white heterosexual male, so everything's tailored to me, so it was fine for me for that. Those issues didn't kick me out of the movie as
much. I really wish that I loved this a lot more.
Yeah.
And I think the small little things in this, I wish that it was really just a terrible film for me to enjoy, because otherwise it's a great, harmless little Christmas movie, because, you know, you're not looking at terrible, toxic male characters in this, which we typically do in Christmas films. And it was, I wish it was better for me.
Mm. So we've been talking about Last Christmas, starring Emilia Clarke, Henry Golding, Emma Thompson and Michelle Yeoh. Let us know if you are interested to see it. WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. Tweet us at SkipIntroMY or write us at movies@bfm.my. And coming up, we're going to continue our conversation by talking about another Christmas movie called Klaus. Keep it here on Skip Intro, BFM 89.9.
Best flipping moments. BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Hello everyone, you're listening to Skip Intro with Iman, Ian and Julian. And earlier we heard Ian and Julian's review of Last Christmas. And now we are going to talk about another Christmas animated movie called Klaus.
Mr. Klaus, you have a gift. You were meant for making toys. So I figured if you donate your old toys, I'll deliver them for free.
Tonight.
But our cousin told us if we write a letter to Mr. Klaus, he'll make us a toy.
Dear Mr. Klaus.
Dear Mr. Klaus.
Shall we then?
Yep.
So this movie is written and directed by Sergio Pablos in his directorial debut, and it stars voice stars Jason Schwartzman, J.K. Simmons, Rashida Jones, and Joanne Cusack. So you guys have seen it. Can you tell me what are your thoughts on it?
This is a stealth Christmas banger.
Yep. Yeah, and also keeping it on Netflix where they're not advertising it at all. They're not putting it on the main page. You just don't know that it's there.
I knew nothing about it except you mentioned there was a cute kid and some other people said you should watch it, and that's all I knew about it. Mm-hmm. And when I saw the standard image on Netflix, I was like, oh, it's just some Christmas movie. And then again, just like Let It Snow, I was like, hey, that's Joan Cusack. So I guess she's now joined the Netflix touring repertory theater.
But just for Christmas.
Yeah, and then Norm Macdonald turns up, who has a great voice. His personality can be a bit weird sometimes, but he has a great voice. It's like, oh, why isn't he in more animation?
The surprising one for me was Jason Schwartzman, because you automatically know it's Jason Schwartzman because it's not deadpan, it's not lazy, but he's not enthusiastic, but he is enthusiastic.
It's that kind of like nerdy panic.
Yeah.
Like, he's really good at it, even though, and like, you know, like young kid nerdy panic, even though he's 39 now, because that was something that hit me. But we should say a little bit, this movie, it doesn't have a twist as such, but it is a new take on an old tale that, it's just, like I said, it's stealthy. It doesn't tell you what exactly is going on. It starts with this guy, Jesper, who's
a mailman.
A spoiled, rotten mailman. He's not even a mailman yet. He just like has a tent outside the academy where he eats grapes because his father runs the academy and is a rich man. And this is basically, he doesn't realize it's his last chance, but he's been told, like, you're going to get cut off unless you go to this middle-of-the-nowhere town and you have to have 6,000 letters that go through your hands in the course of a year. Otherwise, you're cut off from the family inheritance. And this kid's never done anything in his life worth anything. Mm-hmm. And there's a guy who lives in the wood called Klaus, and he's a big mountain of a man, and that's it.
Yeah.
And the town is awful, and everyone hates each other.
It's Angry Birds, the town.
Kind of. It's the Hatfields and the McCoys. It's like a family feud thing going on, and it's... But all of this is revealed in such a clever, smart, beautiful way because of the way the animation is. And the movie treats you with such respect to the audience. Mm-hmm. Like, I was like, what is going on with this postal guy? I mean, it looks beautiful. It's like, it's kind of stylized. It's like a cross between Don Bluth and The Emperor's New Groove.
Yep.
And the Emperor New Groove vibes get even stronger once the central pairing that happens in the movie happens.
Jason Schwartzman is basically David Spade as Cusco. He sounds exactly the same. And I didn't care. I loved it anyway.
I like The Emperor's New Groove.
Yeah.
But like, there's elements of the story of like, you start realizing what they're doing and it's not shoved down your throat. And it's like, oh, I see. Because they're revealing something about an old tale in a different way. And when you start seeing it, it starts making you feel smarter about yourself. There's elements that also happen with regards to Klaus's involvement in the story that are mythical, magical, and never explained.
Yeah.
And that's just, from a storytelling perspective, that's awesome. And then to have this absolutely beautiful style over everything. When we were watching Ford v Ferrari last week, I was checking myself to say, is this 3D? Is this real cars? Mm-hmm. In this, it's 2D animation, but they've done so much with shade and lighting and shadow that I didn't know how they were doing any of this. I just knew that, you get moments in animation movies where there's like, all right, here's like a boring scene that they're just going to have like a long shot, or they're just going to have some basic, you know, background not moving or anything like that. Every frame of this seems to be amazing.
Yeah. And of course, it's Christmas. There's going to be snow. The town that it's all set in is completely covered in snow. That's called Smearensburg.
Yeah.
That it's completely cold and icy. So with snow, you get a lot of sparkle, as usual. And it's such a beautiful, sparkly movie that has a sheen on it. But it feels like you can feel the kind of attention and the detail that's been put that you can get in traditionally animated films. So Sergio Pablos, who directed this, he worked on the Disney Renaissance films, Hunchback of Notre Dame, Hercules, and Tarzan. And he set out to make a film that was traditionally animated, but wanted to see where we would be today if we continued doing that instead of moving to 3D animation. And you can see how animation would have evolved and changed because it does still feel rough and raw, and they use that to the best advantage because then you use it to put detail into, you know, characters' hair or clothes or the trees or the nature around it, and it's so, so beautiful. And it kind of feels like you can always tell how, because a lot of it is set in the forest and in a town, so you can always tell the different layers and the backgrounds in it. It draws you in, especially in a film that is about Christmas. You want to have that Christmas spirit, and it's very enveloping, I think, and it never feels, you know, like you're watching a film, I think.
Do you think that if it was 3D, you would have received it differently? Like, does the 2D-ness add to it, make it better?
I think it transcends those kind of decisions because it's so well crafted, it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if it was, I was thinking, because there are ways to treat 3D that looks like it's hand animated, and, you know, one of the things that Pixar did that got, like, you know, every Pixar movie is in a step forward, like, you know, Monsters, Inc. is fur or whatever like that. Yeah. There's a point where they could squash and stretch the characters because that's what people have been doing in animation for years. It's like these exaggerated shapes that you only see in the blink of an eye, but add so much character. And you get that in this, but also you get the Klaus in the Woods likes to build birdhouses, and there's just shots of all these birdhouses hanging on ropes from trees that looked like something out of a Studio Ghibli movie.
It looks exactly like the scene in Tarzan when Tarzan and Jane go up into the treetops and you can see all of the birds. It feels exactly the same. There's a pure and beautiful kind of singing light to this film that you can feel throughout, even when they are two towns and two families fighting. It has Christmas spirit. I can't believe I'm saying that, but it does. I hate Christmas spirit, but that it has it.
And you've been infected by the mind virus of Christmas.
But the whole film has all the things that are going to make you have. You've got kids, you've got presents, you've got one terrible character who has goodness in him, and you have one incredibly good character who just radiates pure love but is a little bit terrifying, and they have to, you know, work together to make something happen. It's going to work.
Yeah. And then also, for some reason, this is the third movie in as many months that has Sami kids in it from Lapland.
There's
a small Sami child in this who just, when she introduced, they're either Danish or Swedish. I think Smirsenbergen, whatever it's called, is like a misspelling of a Danish town. But the first time she's introduced and speaks her own language, like the David Spade character is like, what's wrong with her mouth? That's the other thing we should mention. It is funny. Like, that's not making fun of her. It's like, it's making fun of how much of an idiot he is. You can, what you were saying earlier about the evolution of 2D animation, there's an, when you mentioned Hercules there, I didn't realize he'd done Hercules. You can see the evolution from those designs into these ones, and how it's like, it's not that Greek style, but there is that same kind of, everyone is identifiable by their silhouette.
Yeah.
And it's very funny, very touching. It's best if you go in with no expectations and just get blown away by it.
Well, it sounds like it's a fantastic movie. I'm going to check it out. So we've been talking about Klaus, which is a movie on Netflix starring Jason Schwartzman, J.K. Simmons, and Rashida Jones. So let us know if you are interested to watch it. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899, tweet us at SkipIntroMY, or write us at movies@bfm.my.